A stronger economy is persuading senior executives to leave their jobs in the federal government. 23 federal chief information officers and other senior IT leaders left their jobs in 2014. One reason why is more industry opportunities because of the improved economy. Prashant Gaur is president of Credence, former director of enterprise integration at the Department of Defense, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And Prashant, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for coming in today. Let's start with the company that you work for. Tell me how you serve your clients and, customers in the federal government. Thanks for coming in.
So first of all, thanks, Francis, for having me here. And thanks to everybody who's listening. In terms of what we do, Francis and I were talking earlier. We are here to serve our clients. And federal space is one where you can have very high impact issues. We have set ourselves up primarily as a management consulting firm. And in terms of our client base, we have got quite a strong presence at DoD. We work with quite a few folks in the C-suite. We are also in the civilian space. But one of the factors which kind of made us do this is because we wanted to set up a great small business where we could have fun and serve our clients well. And a small business gives us the flexibility. I've been in the government, I've been in large industry, and I have to say I'm literally enjoying this as one of the best jobs I have.
You were in, as you mentioned, in the consulting business before you went into government. You worked right at PricewaterhouseCoopers. What's the consulting business like now? How is it different compared to how it was before you went into government, given where we've come budget-wise and the managerial challenges and changes that the agencies are going through? How has that? How has the business of working with the government changed in your view, Prashant?
So government is very complex. And I believe everybody who is in the business, whether it's the contracting officers, whether it's the program, whether it's us, is trying to do our best. However, as you know, the budgets are going down. So one of the fundamental things which has changed is the emphasis on cost. And I have to say, being on this side, sometimes we do get the feeling that price determines everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure on this show, enough people have talked to you about LPTA and
like
that.
Yeah.
So obviously, that is one thing. Obviously, as you can see, it's my pet beef. Mm-hmm. It really does not help the government as well as us. But beyond that, beyond the price pressures and all, there is a lot of competition, which is healthy for the government, and I think it is still a very good business.
The concept of LPTA, is it your view that it's as bad as a lot of industry makes it out to be? Because we had my colleague Jared Serbu talk to Dick Jinman and Shay Assad of the Defense Department on this week's edition of On DoD.
Okay.
And I'm paraphrasing, but the takeaway for me from their conversation was, well, industry makes it out to be a lot worse than it really is. I'm not going to ask you to disagree outright with them,
what's your sense of
what the state of the art is on that?
I respect them hugely, and I respect the pressures.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of whether it is not as bad, the reason obviously it is done is, I mean, to a certain extent, industry also has to be blamed for it because it allows the government a very quick, non-protestable way of deciding on a particular RFP. I mean, it really comes down to that. But in terms of the industry and us helping the government, it works for simple engagements. But when we are looking for complex solutions, when we are trying to deliver results for the government, I would say to you it comes in the way because very realistically, there is a price to be paid for good talent.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, because we are bound by the need to win, to get into the door in the first place, to make an impact, it does affect. So my very respectful submission would be the government does need to look at different ways rather than to think that one size fits all in terms of LPTA.
The consensus that I see that's kind of coalescing around the concept of LPTA is that it's fine for goods, terrible for services. Is that an accurate assessment in your view?
I would say I would take it one notch higher, meaning it's actually okay for things like administrative services and things like that.
Okay.
But when you're asking someone to, say, help come up with a new financial system or even to come up with even maintaining a system, because when you're maintaining a system, you're literally asking the contractor to come up with new ways to save money or to keep up with the technology. And I would say to you, LPTA does come in the way.
Mm-hmm. The life cycle cost element of it. I mean, I've talked to Beth McGrath a number of times,
sure,
both before she left the DCMO's office and now that she's with Deloitte.
Yeah.
And she talks on an ongoing basis about the cost culture.
Uh-huh.
And this is something you were involved with at DOD as well.
Yeah.
How much of that is a factor in, do you think, in changing the mindset or influencing the mindset of industry that we'd better be low on price, even if it's not apparent, even if it's not obvious that a competition is necessarily based solely on price? I imagine after a while that gets hammered into people's minds. We better be as cheap as possible. We better be as cheap as possible. We better be as cheap as possible.
Right. And I mean, total life cycle cost is a great concept, but it is also a little bit complex to put in terms of RFPs.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when it comes to the industry, we do end up responding to the RFP. So one way out of this would be to kind of say that there's a set of folks who work, companies who work primarily as trusted advisors and help the government come up with RFPs in the first place. Because once an RFP comes out, the industry primarily focuses on Section M.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really how the Section M gets written decides what the government is going to get. So I like the concept. I'm a supporter of it. But at the same time, it is a little bit challenging, at least right now, how to implement it.
Do you like what you're seeing coming out of Frank Kendall's shop with better buying power and some of those efforts to try to remind people essentially that they can do things a different way, that they don't have to buy the absolute cheapest thing every time?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what I'm seeing is a little bit of lag. I mean, DoD is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great organization, but it obviously takes time for the mindset to change. So from that perspective, I'm really welcoming a lot of the changes.
Let's broaden out a little bit more and focus a little less on DoD for the time being. What are some of the big challenges that people are bringing to you, not necessarily in the form of actual requests for proposals,
sure,
but just the things that as you network with your peers inside government, they're saying, Prashant, these things, whatever they are, three or five things, are the things that are really nagging my organization right now that I wonder if you might be able to help us with.
So I'll talk about some of the feedback. And I think the human resource or human capital shortage is becoming more and more acute, because even if you look at the acquisition workforce, a lot of really good, phenomenal people coming into that whole workforce, but at the same time, they do not have as much experience as is needed. So I think it's the human capital problem, which bothers a lot of people. It's also in terms of how do you link what the functionals are looking at, what is the IT looking for, and ultimately what contracting managers to put together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also a big issue in terms of the government, especially on the program side, functional side. They need to move very quickly because there's an expectation. We are on the outside. We want them to be as fast as the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
But to make that happen in terms of a cycle of change gets to be fairly critical. And that also weighs down on people a lot. And if you look at it from the folks who have to do their day-to-day job, very realistically, they would also like to get away from some of the continuing resolutions or the continuous threat of,
sure,
oh, we'll have yet another shutdown, because
uh-huh,
people want to be respected. I mean, that's the other thing which has rankled a lot of the folks. I mean, I'm sure you've talked to folks that people want to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, federal workforce does a great job. So I deliberately gave you a broader answer as opposed to just a company, but these are the things which I see out there.
No, but that's good, because what I'm a trend that I'm seeing, and I wonder if you see it in the conversations that you have with agency leaders, is especially in the human capital piece, is a greater understanding from the non-HR folks about,
yes,
how tightly woven and tightly integrated they will need to be with the HR team.
Yes.
And vice versa. I see a more aggressive, aggressive is not the right word. I see a more proactive approach from HR folks to say, we're really ready and excited to help you solve challenges even if they're not people challenges, we can help you solve them from a people perspective by making sure that you have the right folks in place to be able to do that, because they understand as well as everybody else understands, budgets are tighter, more oversight focus from Congress and all of these other things.
No,
you,
I totally agree
the same thing?
No, I see the same thing. And in fact, if you look at the federal workforce today, as opposed to, say, 10 years ago, there have been a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. I myself was the beneficiary of it, because you see a lot of people going in from the private sector, coming out. So it is working both ways. I mean, you talked about when you introduced me of people coming out, but I also went in.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
There are folks who are coming in, and I see a lot of very young folks straight from the universities, which is great. So yes, HR is stepping up and doing a great job.
Prashant Gaur, the president of Credence, formerly at DOD and also with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We were talking a little bit in the first part of our conversation and then also continued it during the break. You mentioned in the first part of our conversation, you go right to Section M when you look at an RFP. Are there things that contracting officers, writers could do that would draw your attention to other parts of what they're looking for? Or is that just the nature of the beast? I guess what I'm getting at is, how do we go about writing better contracts, writing better requests for both proposals and information to help agencies, help the government get more information that will help them make better decisions?
So since I've been on both sides, I would prefer not to give you an answer that they need to have the solution well-defined and all that, because right. I'd rather base it on what works and what doesn't.
Uh-huh.
And from what I've been watching, so first of all, to answer the first part of the question, ultimately, people will look at how they get evaluated, whether you call it Section M or something else. So I think the evaluation criteria will always have to be well-defined, mm-hmm. because the government has to be fair to everyone. But in terms of a trend which we have seen, which I like, and which we as a company also have benefited from, are trends like, for instance, you might have heard of the OASIS contract,
mm-hmm.
very numerical based, very much certifications based and things like that. And we are seeing, because it was a successful model, we are seeing other RFPs from the GSA, for instance, HCATS is repeating it, Alliant will repeat it. So when I look at all that, my one suggestion would be that, okay, it makes sense to have numerical solid data,
mm-hmm.
but let's now think through what does the government really want in terms of doing this, because a lot of the times there are lots of nuances in terms of how you're going to look at how real value is brought. And one way to do this is, again, at least to give kudos, again, a lot of people in the government do a great job of how the OASIS or the GSA did it, have a lot of interaction with the industry, because we do want to have a good RFP. We are not necessarily just pushing the cause of Credence or any particular company. There are obviously great forums, which you and I have been associated with, like ACTAC and all that. But even just using social media, as we talked about, just put it on the web and get industry survey back, and you will get a richer kind of product. But I like the trend towards making it very kind of fact-based. But at the same time, what are the facts you're looking for in the first place,
mm-hmm.
has to be a question which really needs to be discussed.
You mentioned the General Services Administration, and we have one of our top stories on federalnewsradio.com this afternoon is the departure of Dan Tangerlini. He's leaving the General Services Administration after about 3.5 years, and you can read all the details on his departure date, and so on, and the memo that he sent to everybody at the General Services Administration at federalnewsradio.com. What do you think the legacy of somebody like Dan will be, Prashant, after 3.5 years there? You give a lot of credit to the OASIS contract. Some of the other vehicles there have also been very well received. What's your takeaway from his tenure at the agency?
I'll speak more about the agency.
Sure.
Because we all work very closely with the agency. We have
sure.
a lot of friends there. And I would say that the agency does a phenomenal job. And I'll especially speak from the perspective of small business, where I am. The way they have conducted the contracts, the reach and the ability to work with different agencies is phenomenal. I do know that, obviously, we all know that it has had its share of bad publicity. But if you look at it from the value it brings, it's great. And my hope is that through all these changes, I mean, Dan provided very good leadership, but I really do hope that the GSA, and they have made some great strides in terms of even things like their workspace and things like that. I mean, things which we normally don't even see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great organization, and I'm really hoping that the morale comes up, they feel very strongly about themselves, and help us all serve the government.
You mentioned a moment ago the importance of interaction between government and industry. Another Dan in government who is now on the outside, Dan Gordon, talked a lot about that when he was the administrator of federal procurement policy. You see, as a residual effect of his Mythbusters campaign, that interaction improving, or are we still kind of holding steady as far as the willingness of agencies to interact with industry?
I do see that the environment is increasing, but at the same time, unfortunately, if you come down to the level of the day-to-day contracting officers, unfortunately, we haven't set up a mechanism where they are awarded for great contracts, but they also always get beaten up for protests and not so good contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was hoping at some point and through all the acquisition changes, something like this, something good happens. What I mean by that is, coming back to the example I gave for acquisition, we, as the industry, get CPARs for our performance, and we are very focused on that in terms of how will we perform. I would suggest to you that the feedback which the contracting officers get should be related to the CPARs we get, because at the end of the day, the program is being served by the contracting officers in terms of the services. So there has to be some way of saying, guys, you did a great job,
mm-hmm.
and providing them feedback. And I think once we have that mechanism, I think we'll take the next step. So I would love to see far more interaction on a day-to-day basis at the contracting officers level as well.
Who do you think would be the ultimate judge of whether of when someone hits that high bar,
uh-huh.
and how would you measure it? Is it something that you can apply metrics to, or is it more a case of we know it when we see it, that a contract has been done very well?
I think the metric really is, unfortunately, a two-year cycle, because a good contract takes that long.
Mm-hmm.
But a metric is if you manage to kind of put it through and it gets used well, and most important, it gives good results.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to the LPTA example, if the end result is mediocre performance, because ultimately the government gets what it pays for, then maybe not necessarily it was a great contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to extend the definition of a great contract to that level. So I would say it's a two-year cycle, but it is very measurable.
We talked at the beginning of our conversation about your progression
sure.
from a big company to the DOD, which is a big entity on its own, and now to Credence, a small
yeah.
company. What's it like being at a company like you're at now and looking up or looking out and seeing all of these the big guys stomping around and you're kind of trying to maneuver around all of them?
I have to say it is fun. I mean, even though your analogy was stomping around, I would say it is fun, because at the end of the day, what a small business allows you to do is to be yourself and to provide value as who you are. And as we talked at the beginning of this conversation, it's a great town. They're great people. And it really allows us the freedom to project ourselves as good individuals serving the government. So I don't see any issues. We are enjoying it.